Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and if you're a Windows 8 developer, maybe you know or maybe you don't know the breadth of the Microsoft Store. The Windows Store itself reaches out to over 200 different countries and over 70 different languages. How are you going to take advantage of all those different languages so that you can get the most of your app? Well, we have quite a show for you today. Today we're here with Vikram Dinda. He's the Director and Product Manager of the Translator Group. He is going to talk about the APIs that are available to you to have Translator as a service inside your application, as well as the SDK that, or toolkit that we've made available to you to help localize your app as well. He's here with Shandor Maurice, a software engineer. He's a front-end developer. And together, they're going to answer all the questions that I can dream of, and hopefully at the end of the show, you'll have all the tools you need to take advantage of localization as well as take advantage of the translator service inside your app. Guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Jerry.
Shandor, let's start with you. Before we talk about the API, before we talk about the service, tell us who you are for a second.
Well, I've been working on the translator team for roughly 7 years. I was one of the early members back when it was a just an incubation technology within the research division of Microsoft. And since then, the team has grown tremendously. It's become a widely used service. We have a lot of customers, millions of customers per day. And I've kind of grown up with this team and with this product in many ways. So it's been a real amazing experience to watch that unfold and to be where we are today. And I'm just so proud of the whole team and how far we've come. So it's a really exciting thing to be working on.
Nice. Vikram, tell us who you are.
I run the product management and business strategy side for the translator team. Like Shandor said, you know, when I joined, which was a little bit after him, the team was basically a small group of researchers and engineers incubating interesting concepts around natural language. And since that time, as just mentioned, we've really grown tremendously, amazing growth, if not in terms of, you know, the number of customers we have, but also in terms of how many translations we do every day. We do billions of translations every day, and we have some amazing integrations and scenarios that are out there, and we are very excited to be able to offer Windows 8 developers an opportunity to take advantage of this cool technology.
The translator's ability to scale, I want to talk to you about that for sure, but before we get there, let's go kind of back in time. Is the Translator Group itself, is that part of Microsoft proper, or is that part of Microsoft Research?
It's actually a quite unique team in the sense that we actually still sit within the Microsoft Research Division, which is quite exciting for us because we are surrounded by all these amazing minds who are thinking up, you know, great solutions to difficult problems. But what we have found is that this combination of engineering talent, you know, put in close proximity to this research talent, has resulted in very rapid transfer of technology into something that, you know, developers and consumers can use. So we work very, very closely with product teams across the company. The technology is integrated into many, many major Microsoft products. So it's actually a quite unique team, and it's actually fun to be in Microsoft Research.
So talk to me about the translator itself for a minute. If I have a list of English words, let's say, and on the other side I have a list of French words, I can map those one-to-one, but that's not at all how a translation service works. How does the translator work?
Yeah, it's a very good example of machine learning, right? So the machine learning technology that powers Translator is definitely more sophisticated than, say, a dictionary matching approach or, right, you know, just a one-to-one correspondence, like you said. What in fact we do is it's like a learning process, right? So we have training engines, like training algorithms, that go in and look at massive amounts of pre-existing high-quality translations, right? These translations might be sourced from many different means, right? The web, licensed books from publishers, all kinds of other interesting material, including a lot of translations that Microsoft itself had to do over the many, many years that it has localized content, right? And then when these algorithms go through, they are essentially segmenting these sentences into smaller segments and saying, okay, I'm seeing that this segment appears very frequently with this other segment in another language, right? So it's building this kind of a probability model that this is most probably a translation of this. And the more number of times and in the more diverse the content where it sees this type of a correlation, it's essentially building this linguistic model that it leverages when it has to translate a new sentence.
It's sophisticated. I've of course used it on Bing, right? The Bing translator leverages this on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
I've passed in words, I've passed in sentences, I've passed in paragraphs, and it'll even take documents as well, right? How does it deal as it scales out like that?
Yeah, I mean, at the fundamental level is the API, which I think we'll talk a lot more about today. And the API is able to handle pretty much any type of text that you throw at it, right? So you can send it anything from a word all the way to, you know, a huge blob of text, and it can parse it out and it can break it into smaller segments, into sentences, and then you know, send them through the translation algorithms and send them back to you. So it's definitely quite flexible that way. We have, you know, different kinds of parsers, different kinds of sentence breakers, all kind of working in tandem, and giving you the result.
So the API itself, this is our, it's the developer's window into this technology, right, so that we can end up using it. If we want to tap into it, that window, where do we access it? Where's the first point we go and start learning more about it, sign up for it, stuff like that?
Yeah, so our developer and business-oriented site is microsoft.com/translator, and there is a section for developers there. We also cover quite a lot of it on our blog, which is at blogs.msdn.com/translation. Of course, you know, like all the great Microsoft APIs, we have a lot of documentation on MSDN, so that's another resource as well.
And then where do we get started? We go to, it's in the Azure Data Marketplace, or the Windows Azure Data Marketplace is where it resides. That's where we sign up and get our access tokens in order to access the API?
That's right. So the majority of our developers typically go through that marketplace, the Windows Azure Data Market or Marketplace. They it's easy to subscribe. You know, there is a, in fact, we actually offer a free tier of service for any developers to sign up and use, up to 2 million characters a month, which should be, you know, more than enough for a lot of activities.
Yeah.
So it's actually very simple to sign up. And if you are a developer for, say, a larger enterprise or a company, and you need, I mean, we offer quite a number of subscription tiers in the marketplace. But if you need something bigger than that, or you need a different billing mechanism or something like that, you know, we are more than happy to help you find.
So if I'm an app developer today, it's mm-hmm. very approachable, this API, because there is this first tier. It's completely free. I can start integrating it inside my application and using it and taking advantage of it without you know, really any risk. But if I happen to stumble on something, right, I make an app that is really compelling, I have it's an easy step to scale up and be able to support a very successful application, right, without having to rework or rewire.
That's absolutely right. It's exactly the same endpoint. There is nothing you need to change in your app. You build the app using the free API, and then as it becomes successful, and we know it will, right, you will go ahead and upgrade your subscription to a higher level. It does not disrupt your API access at all. You can upgrade or downgrade as you need.
And I imagine there's some developers watching right now, and they're thinking, oh, okay, it's a translation service. I could give it one language, and it'll give me back another. But really, this API will do a lot more than just that, won't it? I mean, it has the ability to not just do a simple translation, but also recognize languages. And talk through some of the features of the API as well.
Sure. I'll cover what I can, and if I forget anything, Shandor can let us know. Yes, you know, the simplest thing that you can do with it is translate. So you basically send in a piece of text and you say, translate this for me into this language. You can or cannot, it's up to you, choose the source language. If you don't know what the source language is, you can leave it empty and we detect it for you.
But now wait, I want to make sure that everybody hears that because it's pretty awesome. If I have a translation piece of my application and the user is typing, you have the ability to recognize what language they're typing in without me having to say what language is this, right? I can start sending you samples of this text and you'll start sending me back what language it is.
That's right. So we actually have an explicit call, if you like, right, that just detects the language. But you can also just send us the text and ask us to translate it without specifying a source language. And we'll you know, do our best at detecting it. Now, the thing to remember is, you know, the more text you send us, the more accurate the detection.
Right. And so that extra step or that other API you're talking about is really combining the two. It'll both detect and then translate for you. And you're just saying, as a best practice, if you just send one word, it's going to be a challenge, but they'll still try. But if you send a whole series of sentences, it's more likely it's going to be accurate.
That's right. I mean, if you're building an application where, you know, it's reasonable to expect that once somebody has put in certain amount of information and they, like you said, right, they typed a bunch of stuff in and they're likely to type more in, you can reasonably assume that that particular user is going to do it all in one language moving forward, right? So you could send a blob of text in and get it translated and see which language it was in. And after that, you know, you can
hold on to that value.
Right. You can be smart about keeping that value.
So we can recognize language, we can translate from one language to another or a series of languages. We can translate a series of arrays, right? We don't have to translate one sentence at a time. We can translate documents. I can pass documents in, or am I passing those in as arrays as well?
I think you would pass them as arrays. Shandor, do you know?
You can pass in an entire document as a single string if that's the way your application is structured, but you can also pass in an array up to a fairly large size limit if you happen to have it broken into smaller pieces.
Got it.
But you can't pass, say, a Word document, can you, Shandor?
The API itself does not accept a Word document. The client would be responsible for formatting that. The API accepts either text or HTML/XML markup.
Yeah.
There we go.
That's perfect. So, I mean, developers are used to reading the files they need to interact with anyway. And plus, many of them get paid by the hour, so it's beautiful. So,
it's also like maintaining fidelity of documents is something better done at the scenario level rather than, you know, us trying to kind of do that on the server side.
Well, that's totally true. Imagine how frustrated developers would be if it came back and it wasn't italics when it was before. And so this lets them handle and make sure the fidelity stays true. All right, so the next feature and probably the one I love the most, so let me let you go on.
Yeah, so we also have as output, right, in addition to just text, you could also say, you know, translate and speak. So you can get audio out of the translated string. So that can be pretty handy because, you know, a lot of times you don't know how to pronounce these things.
That's right.
In a language.
And not just a word, but a sentence. And if I say translate it into French, please, that voice that's reading it back to me has a French accent.
That's right. Yeah. So the voices, again, you know, one of the nice things about being in this kind of a research environment is, you know, we get to take advantage of all the best technologies that are out there in Microsoft. So we worked very closely with our voice synthesis researchers, and so there are new voices that are being updated, and so. I'm amazed at how far our voice synthesis has come since the time when we first did it.
So we kind of led into this saying Windows 8 developers building apps today can easily leverage this API so they can have translation services. Now we know they can recognize the language. Now we know that they can also have it being read to them in whatever language and whatever accent as well. Mm-hmm. But it's not just for Windows 8 developers, right? This, your API is exposed. What are the options for developers?
You're right. I mean, this is one of the things we take pride in is that, you know, it's a very flexible API, and no matter what kind of developer you are and what you're building, you know, whether it's a website, whether it's a, you know, some sort of a large like web application, whether it is a Windows 8 application, a Windows Phone application, you know, God forbid, iPhone application, you know, any of these, any application, right, and any platform. We've tried to make this API very simple, yet, you know, it's backed by some very powerful technology. So we wanted to have that flexibility for our developers. And actually, I mean, honestly, some of our, you know, some of our very popular applications that are powered by this API are on other platforms as well.
Yeah. So well, that's just the reality, right? I mean, it's a big world, and there's a lot of things going on, right? It's nice that we support it out like that. I know that I can interact with it just like a service reference, right? I can add it and start interacting with it beautifully like that, but there's also a REST API. That's what a lot of the other platforms are used to leveraging already for all the other services that they're using, and then you expose it the same way. It's not, they're all in parity, depending on how you want to get to it. It's just to the preference of the developer, right?
Chandra, do you want to take this one?
Sure, yes. So as Vikram was saying, we want to make this service available to all different types of client running on all different types of platforms. So we actually expose three different interfaces to access the service. The first one we expose is a SOAP interface. So just like you were mentioning, if you're using Visual Studio, you can add it as a service reference, and then you can interact with it as if it's just a local library. Of course, there are many other types of client out there that fully support SOAP in a very rich way.
Right.
We also expose an HTTP or REST interface that doesn't, it's not specific to SOAP. It allows the client to kind of, it allows the more flexibility over what type of format that they're going to exchange information with us, so that they don't have to encode and decode SOAP. And then finally, we offer an AJAX interface, which particularly caters towards any client using JavaScript language. So if you're writing a web application and you want to build it using JavaScript, which is obviously very popular these days, you can interact with our service purely using JavaScript. So those are the three different interfaces that we expose, and our goal is to make this available to any type of client running any platform.
And so, Chandor, there's three choices there. A developer's going to make a choice between them. Some of them seem pretty close to each other. Walk me through some of the core choices that developers are going to make to know which way to access the API.
Sure. Well, it basically comes down to primarily what type of development environment they're using and what type of application they're developing. If they happen to be working with a development environment such as Visual Studio that fully supports SOAP in a way that very deeply integrates it into your development environment, then SOAP would be the obvious choice. You simply add it as a service reference. You get a class called Translator that you can then interact with as if it was a class running locally on your machine. But in fact, behind the scenes, it's talking to the cloud service, but you don't need to worry about any of that. So that would be the obvious choice if you're working in a development environment that supports SOAP. If you're not, which is often the case, then you're probably going to want to use our HTTP interface, which rather than having to encode and decode SOAP, you simply send plain text and XML to our service, and what you get back is simply XML. It's very easy to parse. It's very easy to deal with. So that caters to clients that development environments that do not fully support SOAP. And then finally, AJAX, if you're writing a web application, such as, say, Facebook, for example, and you wanted to integrate translation into it kind of on the client side, where on demand the user could click a button and something would immediately get translated, you don't want to refresh the whole page. You just want to translate that one string right there in the browser. So we expose this AJAX interface that allows you to interact with the translator purely through JavaScript. And behind the scenes, it's talking to our cloud service. It's using the same backend as all the other interfaces, but the communication basically happens between the client's browser and our service directly. So that hopefully overall that kind of tells you how you would make the decision.
Yeah, and if I was building a JavaScript or based Windows 8 application, I might actually look at your AJAX implementation, right? Is it a JSON payload that I get back?
It is. It's exactly a JSON payload that you get back.
Yeah, very nice. And all of these are really just three different endpoints to the same service that you manage in one place, right? They're just made to make it easier for depending on the type of app you're creating. And
that's broad,
I mean, I don't even know what else you'd cover. I mean, that broad, it seems like you would cover every possible type of application that would be built today, especially modern apps that are built today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, now, that was our goal. So, you know, we definitely get very, very good feedback from developers saying they love having this flexibility.
Yeah, and performance and everything else as well. Let me ask you this. Of course, Microsoft Translator is not the only translator out there, and there's a lot of things that kind of get people when they're using translators, and one of them is, in a particular context or my scenario, right, words are translated special because I work for a doctor's office or I work for, and just fill in the blank, all these different things that really cause the translator to have to think slightly differently. What are the options that developers have to influence the way that translator works so that the translations are better for my scenario?
Yeah, in fact, you hit on a very, very interesting problem, right? You know, when I'm talking about, when depending on what type of app I am using or what website I have, right, you know, Paris Hilton might mean very different things, right? You know, could be a celebrity or could be a hotel.
Yeah.
So as much as the awesome technology and all the computational power does try to understand and disambiguate, it's almost impossible for a machine to understand every nuance of the language.
Yeah.
So typically, from machine translation services, what you get is, you know, what you live with, right? You know, it's just a one-way street. But one of the things that we very early on realized and wanted to address was how do we partner closely with our developers and give them the tools needed to tune those translations to better fit the content within their scenario, right? And so that's exactly what we do. In fact, it's baked into the API. We call it the Collaborative Translations Framework, or CTF for short. And what CTF allows you to do is, for your scenario, you can choose to go ahead and override translations that come in. Mm-hmm. So, and what I typically call this is the post-machine translation customization. So once the machine translation engine has translated something and sent it to you, you can choose to provide a mechanism by which either you or somebody that you have invited, like a translator, mm-hmm. or your community, right, like your users, can go and say, hey, you know, I understand what this is trying to do here, but like this is actually a better translation, right?
So my application, regardless of the context that it's in, mm-hmm. I can start to influence the processing, right? And I can start influencing the output, I guess is the right way to think about it, so that the resulting translation is more and more and more accurate, depending on how much effort I put into it. Now, that influence doesn't cross over, right? Other developers aren't being, I don't know, messed up by me, right? This is all inside my world.
Yeah, I mean, we've designed this very carefully, right? And we've really, like, we're big fans of, you know, things like Wikipedia and crowdsourcing and so forth. So we wanted to really create a best of the both worlds, right, where the community of applications, so to speak, right, that are using the API, we wanted them to help each other but not hurt each other. Right. So
yeah.
So when an application uses this and a developer says, you know, I'm going to enable my users or myself to go ahead and override the translation for, you know, these sentences. Right. What happens is that those overrides will be specific to your scenario, to your application. Right. But they do become available to everybody as alternative translations. So when you call the API, you have the option to say translate, which is the typical call that you make to the API, and it'll give you the best possible translation, right? But
yep.
you also have the option to do get translation. And
it's almost like crowdsourcing translation improvements across the community now.
That's right. So like community applications.
Yeah.
Help each other, and you know you can choose to whether you want to show, you know, depending on the context of your application, you may or may not want to show alternative translations, right? In some applications, it might make sense. In some applications, it doesn't. And you show that, and then that becomes another way in which you can decide, okay, my users are liking an alternative translation better than the default machine translation.
Yeah.
So you tell the API, hey, from now onwards, you know, rank this alternative translation higher for me, right? And then every time that sentence reappears, the API remembers and sends you the highest rated translation for your application.
That is tremendous flexibility for developers to be able to improve the way it's working. Wow, fantastic. All right, I have three things I want to make sure we cover. I don't want to miss out on these. One is about performance. If I pass in a sentence, and a sentence will take, you know, it won't even take a millisecond to translate, but let's say it takes a millisecond to translate, or however long it really takes. If I pass in two sentences, let's say 20 sentences, it doesn't turn into 20 seconds to translate, right?
No, it doesn't. There is typically, I mean, we have some guidance around what is a good request size, but overall, this is a pretty powerful system. We have hundreds and hundreds of servers that cater to your request. We certainly, as long as you know you're kind of keeping to the guidelines, you know, whether you're sending in a short amount of text or a decent amount of text, you shouldn't be seeing any significant delta in terms of how long it takes to come back. In practical terms, it's negligible. In technical terms, you know, I think more text will take a little bit more time, but not exponentially more.
Not exponentially, yeah, right, because it starts breaking it apart and doing it in parallel.
Yeah. Yes, that's something I was going to mention is exactly what you said, which is 20 sentences will get broken and sent to 20 different translation servers, then put back together and sent back to the client. So it really will take a negligible more amount of time than a single sentence.
Well, let's stick on this for a second, the actual mechanics of it. If I'm a corporate developer and I'm really into this, you know, I really like this, I might have in the back of my mind data security. You know, I'm a little worried about sending just anything up to a server. What do you say to those guys?
So typically, I mean, what we try to do, I mean, we are very, very careful. As you know, Microsoft has a great track record when it comes to customer security and privacy and so forth. So we follow all those principles, and we offer SSL support. So you can send everything securely to the service, so usually, you know, once we offered that, like a lot of our developers have been very, very happy with the level of security that they have.
And as I tailor the translations, I can also mark that not to be shared across the community.
Yeah, so the interesting thing about that is that the only way somebody is able to even see these, see anything, right, and they will only see alternatives, and that also if they have the original sentence, right? So unless you actually send in, you know, some kind of confidential original sentence, there is no way somebody is able to see an alternative
right.
for that. So it's pretty inherently quite secure that way.
Right.
The one other piece very quickly I wanted to mention is I talked about this as a post-machine translation customization, right? So this is after the machine translation is delivered by the engine. You know, this is how you can override it and how you can reuse the translation, right?
Yeah.
Now, we also have a very innovative technology that we released last year called the Microsoft Translator Hub. And that is the other half of this equation.
Okay.
It is the pre-machine translation customization. Now, you know, if you are a small developer, you know, who you know doesn't do a ton of translation, it may not be that applicable. But let's say you are from an enterprise, like you said, right? And the enterprises typically have a large amount of data that is already, you know, that a large amount of translations, right?
Yeah. Press releases or who knows what. Sure.
Right. You know, and they have certain terminology and certain way of translating things. So they can really leverage the Translator Hub to go and influence the machine translation engine itself into translating in a particular way, right?
So the technique we were talking about before is after you get it back, you can start to tweak it. This is a preemptive piece where you can take stuff that you already trust and influence the translation before it even occurs.
That's right. I mean, the main distinction here is when you use the collaborative pieces, right, the CPF, what's happening is you're correcting it at a sentence level. So if you corrected something, you corrected a particular sentence translation, then in the future, when that sentence appears again, it translates it properly. Whereas when you use the hub, you're actually influencing the language model. So it's even more sophisticated, and it's able to, even if it's not a perfect match, you know, sentence-wise, it still is able to benefit from this training that you're doing. Essentially, you're building your own machine translation engine using your data. Like you
exactly.
combine your data with Microsoft's data and make a really powerful machine translation engine that is tuned to your data.
Think of the quality that you can start to drive toward as well. You already get just out of the box, the quality is high, and now you've made it so tailored to your organization. The language, you probably have already spent the time and money to have a language hierarchy, you know, that you've already figured out, a series of documents that you've already trust and love, and then you can let those be the guide for the translator to translate in the future. That's very powerful.
Yeah, and you can pull these edits that you have been doing in the collaborative translations piece back into this training system so that you can build a really powerful cycle that continuously improves the translation quality. And the hub is completely free.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So it's not an upcharge. This is just a feature.
That's right. It's just the hub just influences the API, you know, how the API translates. So you can choose to use it or not, and it's free.
We've talked about the API and the way that I can kind of build my app around it and use it as a translation service. There is this one other piece I want to make sure, especially Windows 8 developers, they realize is a piece for them, right, a toolkit that they can use, and that's the multilingual app toolkit. And could you just explain what that does for developers?
Absolutely. So the multilingual app toolkit is a toolkit that our friends over in Windows built working closely with us. And it leverages the Microsoft Translator API to, you know, power, like it uses that to help them localize the app into different languages. So the whole idea here is you might have, you want your app to reach a very large audience. And in order to do that, you know, you want to make sure your app is localized into many different languages. Typically, localization is a very expensive process. And, you know, in kind of the old school way of doing things, it used to be that, you know, developers would build the app and then they would send it off for localization and then localizers would, you know, go through it and localize it and charge you a lot of money. And then they will find bugs and, you know, there are places where the strings don't fit anymore once they are converted into a different language. So there are a lot of these like back and forths that you have to do. With the MAT really helps you overcome some of these problems and potentially make it cheaper for you to do localization. The benefits, especially for smaller developers, are phenomenal because you might not have thought of making your app available in many languages, and you're missing out on, you know, millions of potential customers, right, or users.
Yeah.
So the multilingual app toolkit is nicely integrated into the Visual Studio IDE, so you can add and manage translation files from within Visual Studio.
That's right.
It has a pseudo language engine that allows you to do in-house testing of localized apps. So you can actually pseudo language. You know, it's not like a real language, but it gives you a sense for how does this app look in a different language. Right.
Right.
So that's a functionality.
Sometimes developers start writing the app in their native language, and they start even moving the design and the graphic elements around their language. And so this is the pseudo language allows them to see first. What if we just shot your native language out of the picture, I mean, does anything immediately not work? Let me make sure I understand it. So I'm writing an application inside Visual Studio, of course, for Windows 8, and I realize the opportunity that I have to localize, right? I realize Windows 8 is across the world and in all these different languages, and if I don't localize, I don't get to take advantage of that. Just like if I go to the store today and I see an app and it's not in my native language, I likely won't download it. And so you don't want that scenario to be for your app. So the toolkit allows a developer to say, take my app as it is today, and run against it and find my strings and immediately translate them using the Microsoft Translator, right?
Yeah, I mean, typically, so you need to use some of the best practices for creating localization-ready apps, right, so that you use the appropriate resources and so forth.
Right.
And then you use this toolkit to both test it as you go on to make sure that, the layout and all that is being taken care of. Mm-hmm. But you can also use Microsoft Translator to do localization, essentially translate the strings into all the languages that we support. Not only that, you can actually export these translation files and send them to friends, family, or translators. So that they can then, because you might not know all these languages, right? So, they can use...
what a bad situation if you just trusted the immediate output, right? You have to take this extra step to have a real-world validation of the language, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are some interesting mechanisms that you could use, depending on how active a beta community you have, you might rely on the beta community itself to give you feedback.
Interesting. But
overall, I mean, I think it's always useful to have your some resource, some human resource to kind of take a look at the translation, right? And there is a lightweight editor that's available so that the folks who get these translated strings don't have to have Visual Studio or anything. They can just use this lightweight editor to look at the translated strings, correct them, send them back to you, and then you can import them back into your project.
And that's important. We're kind of in a new world here where, apps don't necessarily need a 500-team development team in order to get it done. It really could be a lot smaller where I do hand off the, let's say, French translation off to a friend of mine or somebody I went to college with just to validate that I'm not calling somebody a cat's tail or something by mistake, right?
That's
so
right.
I can hand this to them. I don't have to worry about Visual Studio. They can have this little XLIP editor, install it, validate, give me a handshake back, and I can buy him a coffee next time I see him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very elastic approach, right? You can do it yourself. You can ask friends and family. And as your app is getting popular and you would like to make sure that, you have a professional look at it, you can always hire, a professional translator and still follow the same process, right? You send them the files, they look at it, they give you back updated files.
That's what's beautiful about it. We don't say you have to change the way you do it if you do already have a full process, but now we kind of commoditize it down so that everybody can take advantage of it. It's beautiful. All right, now, before we end, because I can feel that we're running a little bit out of time, and I hate that because I could talk forever on this, I want to go back to the beginning about this machine learning, the ability for it to really change the way that it's translating, for me to influence it. And I'm sure a lot of people are wondering this as they're listening to the show, are we at all at risk of the translator taking over the internet at all and just controlling, and having thermonuclear war from it?
It is a great example of a machine learning problem. So we do have, some interesting machine learning going on here. And of course, there is also places where we are using it for speech recognition, things like that. So, your fears might not be completely misplaced.
Great. But went from a joke to terror. That's what now.
Yeah. No, we do have a lot of very capable researchers around. So hopefully they are keeping an eye on, whether the singularity event is near or far.
Yeah, there's a red button right beside it that all the power gets pulled if we have to.
That's right.
Of course. That's not at all how Skynet was designed, so that's perfect. Vikram and Shandor, both of you, thanks for being on the show. I love the service, love the ability that we give these developers to be able to come in and use your APIs, to be able to use the service so easily inside not only Windows 8 applications, but really any type of app they might have. It's just a reality that developers are writing applications for multi-platforms. And so now we say to them, if you are writing for multi-platforms, no problem, right? We can can support you no matter where you are. And as well as, if you're a Windows 8 developer, we have this toolkit to help localization, because how many times have I beat that drum to say, we are so broad, the Microsoft Store is so broad into so many countries and so many languages, don't miss out on the opportunity to localize, and here's the toolkit to make that step that much easier for you and the investment that much smaller. Guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
And you, the watcher, don't forget to take advantage of both the service and the toolkit. You can find it at dev.windows.com, and we'll see you later.